Thank you for having me here and inviting me to speak about a topic that I enjoy working in, and hope that maybe we can share some information throughout the afternoon about how we're using social media for positive effects and extension. Well, you see here, I'm trying to lead the horse to water, so that might give you kind of a preview about can we make that happen? And so I just want to share for a second about sort of my philosophy or my approach to extension. And I see extension people as connectors that bring a lot of different worlds together, whether they're ag producers, consultants, researchers, even the general public, together with what's impacting agriculture. And we often call on ourselves to be information specialists. And so we can play a role as information specialists in extension. And then sometimes we're called on to be salespeople. How are we reaching people and telling the message? And can we sell the technology and the research-based information that we've created? So we find ourselves pulled in different directions. But if you've ever read the book called The Tipping Point, the philosophy is that by having strategically placed information and connections, that a few of us can change and make a lot of change happen. And so I see that as our goal is in extension. My extension clientele is probably similar to yours. They are a diverse group of people of multitude of ages. Of course, my farmers and producers are getting older, but I wouldn't call that they're set in their ways or not adopting new practices such as the use of computers and cell phones and technology in their equipment. So I don't see that as a limitation to the use of social media. And I also work with Master Gardener volunteers, and so those are more like the general public, and they have a little different interest, and you'll see how I've targeted them a little different in the social media. I also have multi-generational farms, so even if dad isn't into a smartphone and texting, the sons are, and they get their market updates on their smartphones and are adopting those technologies. So we have a variety of clientele. And then I always think that we need to look to the future. Many of my growers have sons. Some of them come out and help in the harvest of our trials that we have on the farm. And those young people, they definitely are into technology and into the use of social media. So I guess I believe that the social media is expedient and cost-effective. It's very appropriate for getting out time-sensitive information. It definitely reaches a broader audience. So there's 5 million users on Facebook now and 2 billion people on the internet. So can we say it's a fad? Well, that's a pretty high adoption level for calling it a fad. So maybe we really need to recognize that it's a part of our future and try to figure out how to make it an effective part that serves our goals in extension. It definitely does target a younger audience, and it can be relevant, and it definitely is interactive, which is part of, I think, one of the strengths of some of the social media tools. Well, social media, depending on how you define it, you know, in 1995, I was getting my first email account. Now, then I came to extension work in 1998, and I thought, well, I need a website. My brothers were really into web development, so one of them helped me launch a website for my extension work. And then I worked with a lot of youth in my local church, and they were on Facebook, and we were taking a trip, and so I signed up for Facebook about 4 years ago. And it was really kind of on that personal social side that introduced me to Facebook and that younger audience. And then a couple of years ago, I started using blogs during the field season to get out information about insect pests and disease conditions. So I've used a blog, particularly during the field season, weekly, and then out of the field season less frequently. And then, let's see, Twitter, I started that about a year ago, and that's kind of interesting, something I'm still just sort of playing with. And then YouTube, I'll tell you about some YouTube videos that I developed. Well, here's my homepage, and like I said, I've had it for a number of years, and one of the things that you'll notice is that over here on this right rail, I've added connections to these other activities I do on social networking, and my Twitter account feed comes up on it, and my blogging feed comes up on it, and there's a link to my YouTube videos. So it all connects it. I need a central point that connects it. So you might, web pages are kind of interesting. I had a lot of hits on my web page, and then a few years ago they dropped off, and now they're coming back up. And so I've seen quite an increase in the web use in the last year. And you can see over 400,000 page views over the life of the website. And then I just have a few numbers, and we'll kind of go over them, but it gives you an idea of how many unique visitors I have to my blog each week. And I did some blogging for the AgWeb, which is the Farm Journal website, if you're familiar with that. And then the Twitter, I'm at 41 followers. That's, you know, insignificant in the world of Twitter, but it's still there. It shows that you can accumulate followers that are watching what you're tweeting. The Master Gardener Facebook page has 24 members. My Cereal Central listserv is 243, and then there's about 15 YouTube videos. Well, I asked the Extension Publications to just give me an idea of the amount of downloads I have on my publications. So they ran this for me last week, and these are all examples of Extension numbered publications that I have on the web. And you can see the variety of visits and view pages. It's interesting to me, I had no idea that the garden pest one was receiving so many visits and views. And so if you total that all up, this is just for the two-year period of 2008 to 2010. There's like 22,000 visits to Extension publications that I've written on the web. Well, then you might ask, okay, well, who's viewing it? Well, I use the Urchin software package that the university offers to analyze the web usage that I have. And so if you look at the yellow dots on this map, these are visitors and the location that they come to my site from. So of course, most of it is in the Pacific Northwest is the largest, and then across the US. And about 20% of the visits to my website are from international visits. And that's about double what it was, say 5 or 6 years ago. Well, so now let's look at Blogger. This is my Blogger, and I'm at bloggerspot.com. And of course, this is a free service. And the beauty of this kind of site to me is that you don't have to be a programmer or know HTML. You just go there, there's templates, you point and click, and in about a half an hour, 45 minutes, you have created your page. And you can update your page. Look, I like my page to sort of have a professional look to it, and I like it to sort of have the same colors. You can't quite add like the OSU logo to it. I haven't figured out how to do that, I should say. And then of course you can, it's easy to post your blog. Now, some people say, okay, Mary, what's the advantage between a, or the difference between email and a blog. So I guess this is kind of how I think about it. A blog, when you post it, it's always there. An email, when you send it, it lands in somebody's inbox and it either gets read or deleted or filed, but it's no longer active on the web. So with the blog, I really like it for, like, Wheathead armyworm, we've had an outbreak of them, and I have a weekly route that we go and we collect samples. So you're posting new and timely, time-sensitive information on a weekly basis on the blog. And then if there's some other activity that's going on, maybe I will post a meeting announcement on it or an agenda. But I really think that the power of a blog is that you can, over time, make all these announcements about the number of pests that you're finding in the field. This year, the stripe rust was a big issue for us in the Pacific Northwest, and we could post weekly updates on the conditions and let people know and remind them about the pre-harvest intervals that were coming up on the fungicides they had available, and really have an interaction going about a pest that and a pressing issue. So I have about 60 to 80 unique visitors per week to the site. And every week I get new visitors that haven't ever visited the site. And those are finding the site probably from their Google or Yahoo searches. So by putting this information on a blog versus emailing it out to my email list, it allows people that are just out looking for information to find it and to interact with you if they desire that. So this is just an example of what the blog looked like this year. I did start blogging for the Farm Journal blog, and I actually quit, I'm going to tell you. And it was sort of a time issue. The audience for the Farm Journal blog was more broad-based, and so I found that I couldn't just cut and paste from my very specific grower blog into the Farm Journal one. And so it added an element of time, and you know, during the field season when a lot of things are happening, I just couldn't keep up on both of them. So that's something I kind of learned for myself this year, was it was difficult to keep two blogs going for me. I started them thinking they were the same audience, but I realized that really the Farm Journal blog was to a larger audience, and it probably needed a more general type of information on it. So now Twitter, I find Twitter interesting. When I go to post, let's see, when I post something on my blog, I Twitter it. So what I kind of see is you make these things work together for you. And really my overall goal is to allow people to find my extension website that has all these resources and information, publications, fact sheets, and so forth. And so to help them find that and to utilize those resources, I'm using the Twitter to announce that I blogged or I added something to the website. And so that's kind of how I use Twitter. If you're not familiar with Twitter, you only get 150 characters. But you can embed a link in there, and they'll help you create the link, and that link drives them either to your blog posting or to your website. So you can use that. Maybe you found something else out there and you post that. And so I've accumulated about 41 followers. I'm following about 78. There's a lot of egg groups out there that have Twitter accounts, and particularly like the Capital Press, I enjoy checking out what they're posting online. Sometimes they Twitter things that don't get a lot of attention in their paper or their upcoming articles that are going to come out. So you kind of get a little bit of a lead time on the issues that they're following. And so those are the type of people I follow on Twitter, and the type of people that also are following me. Now, YouTube, if you've gone to YouTube and looked at a video, you realize that you don't have to have professional quality video to have a YouTube video. And so I listened with interest to a talk the other day where the gentleman had a grant where he had $50,000 to do YouTube videos, and the videos he did were beautiful. Well, I want you to know mine aren't beautiful, but I probably, between the student time that I paid to go out and do the interviews and then some additional student labor to do some editing for me, I probably, not counting the $2,000 camera, you know, probably only have about $3,000-$4,000 into my 15 videos. So these are low budget, and what the target of the project is to interview farmers and farm families and talk about how do they make decisions to adopt change. And I really, my underlying motive was to figure out, you know, do they use the web? Do they talk to just their field consultant? And I talked on this topic at last year's conference about, you know, do they visit Extension? Do they look at Extension websites and that sort of thing? But these are great conversations, and I've posted them now. And the one, I've just had most of them up for a month. And I'm interested in that when I see farmers, they're telling me they're excited to watch their neighbors on the video. And so you get just the neighbors wanting to know how the neighbors are making decisions. And so there's been quite a positive response even locally to the YouTube videos. And it is a way to communicate to people that are not in agriculture about our farmers, allow them to visit a farm family and get to know them. And so I think there's value both to the specific audience that I address and then also to a broader general audience. Well, I wanted to make my videos look a little snazzier. So if you go to Shutterfly, you can build a site. It's just like building a blog site. And I can post pictures on it, and I posted the videos on it, embedded the videos in my Shutterfly site. And so I like that a little better. It's a little closer looking to the OSU colors, and it looks a little more professional than the YouTube site. So this was a great way to get out the YouTube videos and then post pictures and that sort of thing. Here's my Master Gardener webpage, and on it you see find us on Facebook. So here I created the Facebook page. The only thing I did on the Facebook page was create it, and then they use it and post. Well, I just want to report a few results on my survey that I did to find out how people were using information. So this is the results of what information was the most helpful, and you'll see that the greatest use of information was for pest information and updates, newsletters, events, link to resources, and as you can see, they weren't too concerned about my blog. Yeah, that's fine. How often do you visit? Well, most of them weekly to monthly. How did they use the information? They used it to identify a weed or a pest, to find meeting information, to control a weed, select a new wheat variety, build an enterprise budget, or down on the bottom of the list was change tillage. Unfortunately, you know, that's a high priority on my list. But anyway, they're using it for pests and weeds. And then how are you using the information? So the 18% were using it to address issues for their ag clientele. So that's my fieldmans and consultants that are using the information. Then 32% were using it on their own farming operation. And then 50% are using it just to increase their knowledge of agriculture. Well, I wanted to know if they were using the information on the farm. After all, the farm is where it kind of, the rubber meets the road. So 58% were sometimes using it to make decisions on the farm. Another 10% were often, and the 20% that were not applicable, to me, those were the consultants that were using it to talk to their clientele. Oh, I thought I had one more. Okay, yeah, so if I look at that, I've got, 60% that are using it directly to make decisions on their farm. So if you, that's kind of the question that I want to answer. Are they using it to make decisions and to change and adopt new practices on their farm? Well, in conclusion, a couple of things have happened because of my web presence. Last winter, I was contacted by email by Fox Business News to do a live broadcast interview on crop conditions in the Pacific Northwest. They were doing a program, an hour, on crop conditions around the U.S. And I asked the woman, well, you know, why me? And she said, well, I was researching and I found your name. I thought, yeah, you Googled cereal crops or something and came up with my name. Anyway, I did a Skype interview on their show, and you know, that's just one of those random things, I think, by having a presence on the web that creates that opportunity. And then this spring, the provincial government in Toronto contacted me about a sawfly outbreak, and the woman said, every time I put sawfly in the computer, I get your name, so I just had to call you. And so we were able to share some information about controlling sawflies and how we had dealt with it in our area. And finally, in conclusion, I had a grower send me a letter just recently, and here's a quote about it. Mary brought the striped rust problem to growers' attention early, maintained an appropriate and helpful sequence of information flowing to the growers, and there was a bottom dollar impact then to growers as they were able to control striped rust. And before he drags me off the stage, I would just say that the sequence of information flowing to the growers represents the blogging that I did this past season about striped rust to the local grower community. Thank you.